Welcome to Culture Cryptids, the culture podcast where we ask the question, what is horror? Gobble, gobble, and welcome to Culture Cryptids.
You just really had to rush to get that out, didn't you?
I feel like I just peaked the levels too.
Probably. I hope that you're proud of yourself.
Always.
Yeah.
Never. Let's be honest. Never.
Clearly. Welcome back to Culture Cryptids for our holiday season episode opening. I am the lesser known lone gunman, Corey, and I'm joined today.
I'm JD, and just like our podcast, my target demographic is males aged 23 to 27.
I don't want to know, do I?
Well, no. Current metrics suggest that our listenership...
Okay, you lost me at current metrics.
You like numbers?
Do
you
I?
You like stats?
Do I?
61% male and 39% listeners between the ages of 23 to 27. Care to speculate on why that's our biggest demographic?
I really don't want to know. I know I don't want to know.
I have a theory that it has to do with every person that I've slept with recently. I'm told about our podcast to try to get our listenership up.
Is that why they only listen to one episode?
Oh my.
You put yourself out there.
I did.
Oh no, none of that. None of that, please. No, none of it. Oh, well, speaking of uncomfortable conversation, we're back at the time of the year where we're going to have plenty of those with our family.
Oh my gosh. Thanksgiving dinner gathered with the family. What could be better? Lots of things.
What are you saying with that? Getting... Like, where are you going there?
No, Thanksgiving especially, because that's when, it's like the lead up to Christmas. So it's to be able to kind of strengthen ourselves for the amount of time we'll have to put in at Christmas. We just have one day where we have to have dinner with people we don't like.
You say that like a one day. That's not how that works.
Well,
that's
never how that you know works. How like rulers would subject themselves to small amounts of poison over time so that whenever they got actually poisoned, it didn't kill them.
Is that a real thing?
I don't know, but like... It's in books and stuff
like that.
It's
in media, yes. That doesn't mean it's real.
It doesn't mean it's real, but it's a good equivalent to how Thanksgiving is a way to kind of prep yourself for like how much time you have to spend with people at Christmas.
We're not living in The Princess Bride. Like, I feel like maybe you need a reminder, but Iocane powder is not a real thing. Someone's going to be like, yes, actually it is.
I'm going home. I'm going home and I live here.
Oh, no, we're already off to a great start.
But yeah, no, we get to see those family members at Thanksgiving that we don't normally see, and for good reason. There are Facebook-loving QAnon.
I wasn't going to go there. Let's not do that. Okay. Let's not do QAnon. It is the time of the year that your least favorite uncle shows up to family dinner to remind you exactly why you stopped following him on Facebook.
Your least favorite uncle. That's a good code word for it.
Yeah. Your least favorite uncle. And he has shown up to explain to you all of the new and exciting information he has learned about the truth.
Oh, the capital T-R-U-T-H truth?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The truth that they, capital T-H-E-Y,
don't want you to know.
Yes, exactly. That's right. We're talking about conspiracy theories. No, I swear to God, I'm either going to duct tape your hand to this desk, or I'm going to duct tape that board so you can't push those buttons anymore.
All right, I'm going to sit on my hands.
How many minutes are we in, and how many have you pushed?
4 minutes, 2 buttons.
Yeah, no.
I'm done.
You're done. We're all done now. So yeah, we really wanted to talk about conspiracy theories because they are such a big part of horror media in general, and they have been for a really long time. Like, I think that you see a lot of conspiracy theories and conspiracy minded kind of ideas that crop up in a lot of horror media that you don't always know are connected to these big, vast, like, kind of theories until you really like sit down and think about it.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of conspiracy theories that are like real icky, but for the most part, like conspiracy theories are pretty fun. Like that's why I love them because they're so ridiculous.
Yeah. That. I do love conspiracy theories and I love reading about them. I love being like, oh, I didn't even know that this was a thing that people believe. Okay. Time for another rabbit hole. When you can't sleep at 3 a.m., what are you doing? Reading about the lunar landing, and Kubrick's lunar landing on, the internet. That's what I'm doing at 3 a.m.
Oh, generally, if I can't sleep at 3 a.m., I'm getting more people to listen to our podcast.
Really?
You left yourself open for that one.
Did I? I think you just jumped in. Yeah, before we talk about conspiracy theories, we should probably define them so that we can kind of have a better idea exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, because much like the term gaslighting has a lot of meanings to different people that are not the true meaning, I think a lot of people get confused on what a conspiracy theory actually is too. Mm-hmm. So the actual definition of a conspiracy theory is a belief that some covert but influential organization is responsible for a circumstance or event. So it's very different from other beliefs such as religious mm-hmm. beliefs, paranormal shit, or superstition.
Right. The conspiracy theories often reject a standard explanation for an event or a phenomenon and instead credit like a covert group or organization with carrying out some sort of secretive plot behind the scenes. In studying the psychology of conspiracy theories, researchers have been able to break them down into five major elements. So,
is this a list for me, Corey?
I do. I have a list for you today. I have a lot of lists for you today, actually. I feel like this was my episode to have a bunch of lists. So let's break it down. The first part of an element of a conspiracy theory is that there's an assumption of how people and events are causally related and they form a pattern. So
those are your red strings.
Yes. You see red strings everywhere. They all have to be connected. Two is that conspirators are intentional in their actions. These are not accidents. They don't, like, not random happenstance. They occur on purpose.
There's a reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Three, there's a group of dishonest bad actors are working together in order to cause the event or occurrence. So you don't see any lone wolf, no lone actors. There is a broader sense of more people involved.
Like organization.
Yes. An organization or a group of some kind. Four, there is a threat of harm to others from the conspirators. So they're evil. They are bad. They are trying to cause harm in some form or fashion. And then five is that the conspirators act in secrecy.
Oh, that's your big one.
Yeah.
It's gotta be hush hush.
It has to be hush hush. You can't have it. If they're acting in secrecy, there's no actual evidence. And if there's no actual evidence, it makes them even harder for them to disprove. So that is why people kind of are able to believe them. Because if your shadowy cabal isn't leaving anything behind to find, how do you prove it's not real?
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of the pattern of belief that comes with conspiracy theories and how they spread and how people kind of buy into them. But that doesn't explain like what they are or like how to break them down further. So there have been like two researchers in the last like 10 years who have taken the time to kind of identify these classifications of conspiracy theories too.
So these are the like kind of organizing the different conspiracy theories into types.
Yes, okay. Types. So okay. We've talked about like what elements make up a conspiracy theory, but there are also different types of conspiracy theories. So there are two different classification systems. I'm going to go over both of them because, again, hey, lists. Yeah, I know you love lists.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Right. The first one is from Jesse Walker, and he theorized this in the book that he wrote called The United States of Paranoia, A Conspiracy Theory, in 2013. He's also the editor of Reason Magazine, so he has some academic credentials there. And he's identified five types of conspiracy theories. So let's jump into those. The first one is, of course, the enemy outside. So those are theories based on figures scheming against a community from outside of a community.
So like that could be like a foreign government.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two is the enemy within, which of course is the opposite of that.
It's our own government.
Yes. It's not even our own government. Yeah. You have conspirators working inside of a nation or a group, which are indistinguishable from normal citizens. So you have people that are like, they're among us.
So like you're like CIA, PSYOPs,
yeah.
Stuff like
whoever,
that.
Yeah. Whoever they are mm-hmm. among us. Then you have three, which is the enemy above. And that's more of like our nation is working against it, which involves powerful people manipulating events for their own gain.
Oh, your global elite.
Well, is it, it's kind of, yes, the global elite and like the bigger groups of people, not just like a small group working within you, but these are people that are like manipulating you from far above.
Okay.
So then you have four, which I think is probably an interesting one, which is the enemy below. Which features look lower classes working to overturn the social order. And that one kind of almost ties into the enemy within, I think, in a lot of ways, because it is still within your community, but not within your community. So it's people who are in a different class or probably racial group or social class or any sort of, you know.
I was going to say the enemy below sound like, they sound like heroes.
Well, yeah, they do in a lot of ways.
But not to the upper class.
But not to the upper class. That's the thing. So those people are kind of working against you to upturn social order. They don't like things the way they are. They want to change. They want to ruin what we have going on is kind of the vibe there. And then the fifth one classification are the benevolent conspiracies. Which is something that, like, I had not really heard of or given much thought to, because those are not ones that come up very often.
Like good conspiracies?
Good conspiracies. They refer to them as, like, angelic forces that work behind the scenes to improve the world and to help people.
Never heard of one.
Yeah, no, like, a secret good Samaritan group of some kind helping to fix the world, which I can't come up with any good examples of that, really. And I couldn't find any when I was, like, reading through. So that is the first set of classifications. The second set comes from another American academic, and he is also an author of several conspiracy theory books called Michael Barkin. And should paint. When I say conspiracy theory books, I mean books exploring conspiracy theories.
Not on
conspiracy theories. Yeah, kind of like. So Michael Barkin has identified three classifications for conspiracy theories. And he breaks them down in a completely different way. Which is one, they're event conspiracy theories. So these are limited to like well-defined events or occurrences. This can consider something like the Kennedy assassination.
Or 9/11.
Yeah. Things like that are like a one-off event, a big event, a little event, something like that. And they can also kind of talk about something a little bigger, like the spread of AIDS and how that conspiracy theory involving whether or not the government knew and whether or not spread it. The second classification is systemic conspiracy theories. Now, these are much bigger and broader. So usually the goal in these are like to secure control. And that can be a group. You're trying to a community, a nation, or even the world. So this is where you're talking about your shadowy New World Order kind of kind of stuff. Their goals are big, they're sweeping, and they want to infiltrate and destroy existing institutions. These kind of conspiracy theories take place, like usually historically have like focused on groups that are unpopular within your thing. For example, we can all talk about like anti-Semitism. That's a lot of conspiracy theories. Freemasons, communism, and the Catholic Church, surprisingly enough. Or not surprisingly enough.
Yeah, no, that's not surprising,
not surprising at all.
At all.
Yeah. Think that. And then the third one is super conspiracy theories. And these like are Barkin says they like link multiple alleged conspiracies together into a grander scheme of things based on a hierarchy. So at the top you have this very powerful distant evil, and this evil force is working its way like trickling down to causing all these other things to happen.
Okay.
So a lot of the big name conspiracy theorists currently kind of have really pushed this idea that all the conspiracies are interconnected, which makes sense. If you have the red string, your red string is just everywhere.
Oh, like everything ties to New World Order.
Yes. Everything ties to whatever, or lizard people. If you're like, you know,
I mean, lizard people, New World Order, tomato, tomato.
Fair enough. So that's kind of how you can break conspiracies down in the real world. And which I think is really fascinating because, again, as someone who really likes to talk about conspiracy theories and likes to learn about them, it gives you a better, like, framework to discuss them.
Yeah, I think, but thinking of, you know, what the types we have and kind of the classification, you know, why do we create them and, like, where do they kind of spring forth from? And, like, it's almost always due to, like, societal crisis situations are where most of them come from.
Oh, yeah.
Like, an impactful, rapid change that like makes you question it in power structures, mm-hmm. norms of conduct, or even like why these particular groups exist. It stimulates that belief for us because we want to, like, fear causes us to want to make sense of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So make sense of things, anything from like big disasters to changes in political kind of structures in different nations to big events, like big tragedies. People want to make sense of that. It makes sense in a way that they would take the information that they have and try to put pieces together. Where those pieces fall is, you know, kind of the key here. And that kind of brings me to what we're talking about, I mentioned earlier, which is the difference between a conspiracy and a conspiracy theory. Because, like, a conspiracy refers to any covert plan involving two or more people. Conspiracies happen. They are real. There's like the whole, one of the most famous ones, I think, is like the failed plot to kill Hitler. It was a conspiracy against all, you know, with all of his, like, with a lot of his men that came together, and it failed, of course, but that is one that actually happened. But a conspiracy theory is a hypothesized conspiracy, which is, again, people trying to make sense of things. But it also comes with like very specific characteristics, which are like an opposition to mainstream consensus. So it's what, I don't want to use the term the media because that's like a buzzword that has lost all meaning now. But let's talk about like what scientists say, what historians say, what this mainstream like academic or research-based consensus says about a certain event or element or phenomenon. And the conspiracy theories build from like going opposite direction of that without any evidence for it too. Because again, as we said, like they're operating in secrecy, so there's no evidence.
I think like a good example of that is like people always want to say that like MK Ultra is a conspiracy theory, and it's like, yeah. No. That's a conspiracy because it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I think when we were talking about conspiracies and kind of breaking down stuff, like people always talk that like Jacob's Ladder is a horror movie about conspiracy theory. And I'm like, it's actually not like, yeah. It's about a conspiracy. Sure. But it's not a conspiracy theory movie. And like, you know, on an even more serious note, it's like the Tuskegee syphilis experiments. For a long time, people thought that was just a conspiracy theory, that people were making it up. But then it was uncovered through our own government's data and the documents that were, I think, either leaked or declassified.
Unredacted.
Yeah, I think they were declassified, where they were actually using black men unwittingly without their knowledge to study the effects of syphilis while claiming to treat them. They weren't actually treating them. So these are actual conspiracies that have been, that a lot of times our own government has inflicted upon and maybe perhaps unwitting population in a lot of ways. So conspiracies are real, and you can't just say, well, conspiracies are all bunk. But you can kind of like understand the difference between a conspiracy theory and
a true conspiracy.
And a true conspiracy. Yeah. Right.
So there's more conspiracy theories now than ever, right?
I mean, you, for one, know that's not true.
Yeah. So. No, it's one of the things that makes me really upset. It's like, oh yeah, there's more of them now than ever. And it's like, no, we're a much more connected society. We're just inundated with all of this knowledge and information all the time. And everyone is a person with a sandwich board and a bullhorn on the corner. Everyone is.
Yeah.
No, they're not more now than ever. It's actually kind of funny. There was a research project done in 2014, the Unsunki and Parent research project. And in that, they randomly selected a total of 104,803 published letters that U.S. citizens sent to the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune between 1890 and 2010. And in going through all of those, in recent history, there were two big spikes in conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. They were right before 1900 and late 1940s, early 1950s. So you can tie those to the height of the Second Industrial Revolution, and then, of course, the beginning of the Cold War and Red Scare. So there aren't more now. Yeah. There are more then. It's just we see it all the time now.
Right. We see it, and these conspiracy theories that like are like tied to big heightened times of uncertain and unrest, which looks like there. But now that we have the internet on our fingers, we've kind of proven that like having the internet doesn't actually make us not spread misinformation. It just changes the way we spread it.
Exactly. And, you know, we just kind of been building off of that. Like so many of our conspiracy theories are tied to like shadowy government organizations. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. There was another study done in 2014, the Andoig study, and it studied how citizens feel in regards to like trust and satisfaction about politicians, political parties, and democracy in general. And this was done within the European Union. Mm-hmm. The data on satisfaction with democracy ranged from 1974 to 2012, and the data on trust ranged from 97 to 2012. And in all of that data, there was no marked decline in these elements over time. Of course, there's small fluctuations that were usually tied to like major economic events, but people are not more distrustful of the government now than they ever have been. Again, it's not a modern problem.
Yeah. And that's, I think, what people like to tie it into is that this is a modern issue and these conspiracies and these bad things are happening. So we have to make sense of it and just makes things worse. But yeah, conspiracies have been going on for thousands of years that people have been pulling these kind of like things into. Which makes it really, you know, which makes it kind of a no-brainer that we see a lot of conspiracy theories and a lot of horror, the horror genre based around conspiracy theories, because they are fears that a lot of people have. They play on those fears. And in horror films, you can present them as your biggest fears have just been realized. Like, haven't you always had mistrust in the government? Haven't you always had mistrust in any sort of organization, and anybody could be one of them at any point in time.
It's a nesting doll of scariness is what it is.
Because
we use conspiracy theories to make things less scary, to make sense of stuff, like, mm-hmm. you know, these big events. And then it's like, horror's going to come along. It's like, yo, dog, I heard you like scary stuff.
Well, like, and that's the thing, though, is that when we think about it, like coming back to this sort of stuff, is like, what was your first like introduction to conspiracy theories in media?
I think it probably for me was probably related to like Dungeons and Dragons, Satanic Panic type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big one. Especially in the 80s, mm-hmm. like coming up in that era where you had this kind of idea that again, it's satanic cults were all underground and they're going to sacrifice you and your babies. And it was, yeah, the Satanic Panic is a whole thing. And you and I have talked about it a lot kind of off the show and how fascinated we both are about exploring that.
So expect an episode on that, listeners.
I mean, maybe more than one at the rate yeah. we're going. But yeah, Satanic Panic is a really interesting thing.
What about you?
I think for me, it was probably tangentially tied into it was like Unsolved Mysteries because, and I loved.
That show was scary as a kid.
I guess
the music, like the theme music for that was scary as a kid.
You're like, so cute into like music and how it makes you feel. It's like so interesting to me. But yeah, for me, Unsolved Mysteries kind of opened a bunch of doors to these questions and all these mysterious elements, mysterious events that happen. And of course you'd always have some to be like, this person is missing and we don't know where they are.
If you have information, call.
Yeah. But then you also have this person had an abducted by aliens and here's their story and here's what happened to them. And we may never know because there was like all this evidence or this person may have committed suicide, but they also may have been murdered by the shadowy cabal that's tangentially related to this story in ways that presented these things as like, I don't know, could be true, could not be true. You make up your mind.
Like there was just enough real life stories mixed into it to make you kind of be like, huh, because I'm very certain that there were some Vanishing Hitchhiker episodes of Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they at least had one talking about that she disappeared from the back seat in his very, very serious
Robert
voice.
Stack.
Yeah, he had a very, like, very serious demeanor. And so mixing this kind of fact with fictionalized accounts was, for me, very fascinating. Like, I loved Unsolved Mysteries. I was obsessed with the show. So it was...
That checks out.
Yeah. So, and this was presented, much like the Satanic Panic, as real, which is why I think when we started to see conspiracy theories popped up in fiction later, they were so compelling for, like, me, especially. Because I think my, like, Unsolved Mysteries is my way in, but you can't talk about conspiracy theories in horror without talking about X-Files.
Oh, like, yeah. X-Files was a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. It really kind of like, it upped everything.
It made it okay to be public about conspiracy theories you believed in.
It made conspiracy theories cool.
Yeah.
Which is not a phrase that I ever thought. And this is not me like saying the show is responsible for this uptick and all this stuff. That's not. it really brought to light a lot of things that especially were very popular in the 80s and mixed them all together. Because X-Files, if you have not watched the show, because it is a show that's over 20 years old, is about two FBI agents who are brought in to cover unsolved cases, much like Unsolved Mysteries, referred to as the quote-unquote X-Files. And you have Mulder, our intrepid believer, who has been given a partner who's kind of supposed to rein him in, and she is the staunch skeptic, which is Dana Scully. And growing up, like, so many nerd girls wanted to be Dana Scully. Growing up, it was just a thing that you wanted to do.
Definitely had a crush on her as a child.
For sure. And growing up for me, like, I was obsessed with this show and watched, like, weekly. And my friend and I were like, I mean, this is like babies. She was always like, well, I'm the Scully and you're the Mulder. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll be Mulder. He's kind of cool. And now it's kind of funny because...
Oh, you're definitely the Scully.
Yeah, I'm just...
Just talking about the two of us, you are definitely the Scully.
100%, I'm the Mulder. Well, and it was like, Mulder's whole thing was like, I want to believe. And I think that for audiences, you as the audience, you're like, I want to believe that these things could be true and the answers could be out there in these big things that are mysteries. Could someday be solved, but not in the seasons they gave us.
And they covered so much. Oh my gosh. So much. I mean, I did love how it did have a kind of overarching stories, mm-hmm. but you still got some fun Monster of the Week stuff in there too.
Yeah, because the main premise of the show is that Mulder's sister was supposedly abducted by aliens when they were kids. And so he's on this quest to find her. So you start off with this alien abduction premise. So you automatically have UFOs, abductions, and this cover up from the government. So as you dive deeper into it, then you get like man-made viruses and like shapeshifters and cryptids and monsters. And it just keeps going like down this rabbit hole.
And a really fun vampire episode.
Oh, I love that vampire episode so much. It's so good. But yes, you have like all of these things, and they took these concepts that had been like floating around in the sphere of like Art Bell's Coast to Coast, you know, old. For those who don't know what Coast to Coast is, would you like to explain it?
I think it's just something you have to look up. Like, I feel it was like proto, like it was, X-Files may not have made conspiracy theories cool. It may have made them like cool in a mainstream sense. Coast to Coast made conspiracy theories cool.
Yeah.
You were cool if you listened to Coast to Coast.
You were cool if you stayed up late to listen to this radio broadcast. It was Art Bell who was the kind of... It's hard to describe because he was a very soothing voice where he would like sit and people would call in and tell him their weird experiences and he would read the weird news and you would just be like, yeah, the world is a really weird place.
I mean, I could have done the research to see if this was an inspiration for it, but in my eyes, for people who listen to podcasts in a modern era, I would say that Welcome to Night Vale kind of has some elements that are very similar to Coast to Coast.
Yeah. Except Night Vale is fictional. Coast to Coast treated this as real life. Real things. So you had a lot of that with Coast to Coast. And then X-Files kind of brought that in, brought these like things that were floating around in the weird kind of fringes of society and then put new spins on them and like kind of meld them into its own mythos created in the show. And a lot of the elements from X-Files have like been repeated in like some of the most popular films that, and then, you know, films and TV that have come after it. Cause like you wouldn't have had X-Files without Twin Peaks just for sheer weirdness, but you wouldn't have had a lot of the stuff we have without X-Files. And that includes like some of the most like popular stuff. Cause like, I mean, honestly, what was it like? Even Independence Day is one of the ones to make the resurgence of like Area 51 and aliens become really popular. And like, that's not a horror movie. It's an action adventure movie, but who doesn't love Independence Day?
Yeah. But I mean, it ties into like the government cover up of an alien event is definitely a huge part of it.
Yeah. It's a huge part of it. And like, it really is like part of the mythos of building these things where that you see also kind of like, you see it in other films too, big conspiracy theory, like horror films. I would say like, we haven't really talked about it, but Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. I mean, Cabin in the Woods is just such a good mishmash of like so many horror elements. Mm-hmm. And definitely there is the like shadowy shadowy organization element to that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's part of it that like translates. And we've talked about other films too that have that, those same kind of elements in them.
Yeah. Like I think Hostel fits into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, the whole horror of that one is that, oh my God, people are doing terrible things to your body, but it is a secret organization that is arranging for you to be able to do this stuff. Yeah,
this conspiracy that works. And if you watch like the other ones, this conspiracy that works within like the government to be able to procure people to do these things.
Man, what is it with torture porn movies and world building? Like Hostel has it, like the Saw movies have it. Like.
Yeah, I mean, they have to have something to get between the next weird kill to the next weird kill. Another movie that we've talked about that kind of plays into conspiracies is They Live, which, as we have discussed at length about They Live, that it was definitely a, it is a critique of Reaganism, and the director has said that, but a lot of people have like built into this kind of sense of wokeness of waking up and don't believe the lies that the government tells you. So there is an element of like it unwittingly feeding into conspiracy theory building and conspiracy theorists. They're like canon, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm.
I think one that's been visited a couple times is the V miniseries, mm-hmm. the one from, was it the 70s? And then when they redid it in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I mean, those are literally lizard people.
Yeah. Yeah. They build a lot of elements from that to be like, oh, did you think that like aliens? Yeah. Here's the lizard alien people. They really did exist here. So we play into these like really popular ones in a lot of ways. And even like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like all versions of that is built on the fear that your neighbor is not really your neighbor and that they're actually in, they have secret knowledge that they're going to use against you. So you have to be in to be able to combat them. So yeah, like there's a lot of, it's a foundation of horror, I would say, in a lot of ways, that a lot of films that we love are like built upon these tropes we see in conspiracy theories.
And in a lot of them, it is kind of an ancillary element. I mean, I think pretty much any horror film that deals with like Satanism in any way, there's always like a cult, like yeah. a organization type mm-hmm. element to it. But for ones that actually, that is the prime focus, those are kind of, I think, maybe few and far between where it's just like just a conspiracy theory is the root of it.
Yeah. I think it's hard to find those movies where you just are like, okay, we're going to explore this element and just this element. And especially when it comes to more grounded ones, because there's a lot of alien movies. There's so many alien movies. When it comes down to like grounded movies, we really wanted to talk about one that we thought would work in the framework of both conspiracy theories and like real life. Is weird enough.
Yeah, and like in the way that we like to do to kind of maybe explore films that a lot of people may have not seen, this mm-hmm. is one that may have, be under the radar. Yeah.
Yeah. Aptly enough, we're going to be talking about The Conspiracy.
From 2012.
That's right, yeah. So
not the 2012 Conspiracy.
No, not the 2012 Conspiracy. Not the Mayan calendar. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the movie just called The Conspiracy. And this was written and directed by Christopher McBride, whose only credits really include this film and a short film that he did. And then in 2020, he released a movie called Flashback, which I haven't seen.
It's got Dylan O'Brien in it.
It does have Dylan O'Brien in it, but I haven't seen the movie, so I can't speak to what it is. But it feels more like looking at, like, I think I like looked up the premise, everything for it. It feels like it might be in the vein of this movie, too. Like, a little bit more. So, this film was also largely financed by him as well. And would you like to give us your favorite thing?
Let me crack open IMDb here.
Yep.
I don't know what that noise was supposed to be. That's not the sound a book makes when you open it, but... Mm-hmm. A documentary about conspiracy theories takes a horrific turn after the filmmakers uncover an ancient and dangerous secret society.
This film is done in the style of a mockumentary. It's not quite found footage, but it's pretty close, especially since it melds footage of like real life conspiracy theories in with these actors. So you have like real people who are well known for saying really dumb things in with your actors that are also saying questionable things. And the entire cast it's a very small cast. There's really only like kind of three named characters that we care about, and that there's two documentary filmmakers.
You've got Aaron and Jim.
Mm-hmm. Aaron and Jim. And Aaron is played by Aaron Poole, who is known for like other horror films because he was in 2020 as The Empty Man in Flashback from 2020 as well. And then he was also in The Void from 2016.
Which is a fantastic movie that everyone should watch.
Yeah. When it comes to like cosmic horror, like modern cosmic horror, it really knows how to do it right.
If you're going
to
watch that one, you might as well go ahead and watch another movie that that individual did, Psycho Gorman. Just watch them both.
Oh, God.
For different reasons.
Psycho Gorman's so good. But that is another conversation for another time. And then you have, like, so Aaron is the character, is, like, more sympathetic to the conspiracy theorists that they have decided to make a documentary about.
But he's even still pretty skeptical. He's skeptical at the beginning. Yeah.
I feel like he wants to believe. Like, yeah. He's the character that wants to believe.
He's willing to hear you out.
Yeah, as opposed to, like, Jim, who is the skeptic. And he's played by James Gilbert, who is a television actor that was in Moonshine and The Tudors. So these two documentary filmmakers are making a documentary about a man that they found online.
Who did his YouTube videos.
Yes.
Talking about shadowy organizations.
Mm-hmm. Shadowy organizations.
In particular, really one main shadowy organization called the Tarsus Club. The
Tarsus Club, yeah. So, and this club is not a real club, unlike other movies that have brought in like real names of societies. It is a shadow organization that supposedly worships Mithras, which is the Iranian god of the sun, justice, contracts, and war.
He a big bull.
He's doing a lot of stuff. That big bull, because he's a bull motif, is real busy. Real busy being a god, doing a lot of stuff. So it's kind of interesting that it ties into this, like, both the sun and, like, contracts and war, considering that supposedly, according to this conspiracy theorist, Terrence G is the name that he has given. He says that these are like these society of rich individuals can change the world on a whim. They are the force behind the scenes, as it were.
Yeah. Like this gathering that the Tarsus Club has every mm-hmm. year, these are where the big worldly decisions get made.
Right. So the filmmakers are kind of follow Terrence, and this film is such a microcosm of like mid-2000s, late-2000s internet culture. Because not only did they, like, find him on the... Is it actually YouTube?
I think,
like,
it is actually YouTube, yeah.
They also go with him into his chat rooms.
His chat rooms still look like The Sims.
Really badly pixelated Sims. And they use these little avatars where it looks like people without faces with their names underneath them.
At, like, a fancy party. Like,
yeah. To represent... And I get it, because they're trying to represent, like, internet culture of the time. And how do you visually represent a chat room? But the funny thing is like, our cast is talking into a microphone at these people. But they're, like...
Text bubbles.
Yeah, text bubbles typing back to them. So it's not it's a chat room, but one half of the party is... talking and the other half is tight. I'm not really sure how it works.
They did the best with what they could.
Sure. I get it, especially in that era. So they kind of follow him down this like rabbit hole until it comes to one day Terrence just mysteriously disappears.
Yeah, they show up at his apartment and it's been just absolutely wrecked and ransacked.
Mm-hmm. So,
but you know what's still left?
What?
Is his board.
Right.
With his red string.
Red string. We're going back to red string, and it is on the board for him, like, connecting these things. Which seems to me, if you're going to ransack someone's house and, like, steal all of their, like, notes and things, you would maybe take the data that they have on the wall.
I mean, because Aaron takes it and just runs with it.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point, like, Aaron has decided that this is real and he has to follow it. And at that point in the story, he becomes convinced that he is being followed by the same... Like, there's a biker, like a actual cyclist, who may or may not have been following Terrence early on. Even though they're in, like, the meeting in the same places, so it could be this guy's bike route. We don't know. Which is sort of the question is, like, is this real or is this, like, descent into paranoia?
Right.
And they decide that they are going to try to infiltrate the Mithras Club themselves and get answers.
So they make a point to go to this gathering and try to sneak their way in.
Yeah, which...
With mixed results.
With mixed results, I will say. And this movie has been out long enough that we could probably talk about the ending. But it's one of these movies that I think people should watch, so I don't really want to give so much away. And even, like, telling you, like, these things happen in the movie isn't really spoiling anything.
No, I mean, it's one of those ones, yeah, I don't want to give anything away, even though it did come out in 2012, mm-hmm. because for this type of movie, like a... found like kind of a found footage mm-hmm. somewhat in that vein movie that deals with conspiracy theories. It could be very bad, but I was very satisfied with the end of this movie.
Yeah, I think that the filmmakers themselves did a good job leaving you with questions about the society, about the mockumentary filmmaker, the actors and their kind of fates and the stories that they're telling is lets you kind of decide for yourself. And I think that that's interesting because it kind of pushes you in a direction, but doesn't quite like let you go all the way there.
Yeah, they do a really good job of planting seeds for these questions from the very beginning of the movie, and it gives you enough go on to kind of like try to form your own conclusions. Also, I remember watching it and being like, okay, if they're going to infiltrate this organization and we're supposed to be perceiving this as a movie that's been made about this, why would this organization let this movie come out?
Yeah.
And you have people from the organization that are interviewed for mm-hmm. it, and they make they're like, oh, well, we wanted to let this come out so you could see that we're not like some, you know, evil group.
Yeah.
But then there's also the comment made that like, oh yeah, these secret societies will do that from time to time. They let just enough information leak mm-hmm. that.
So, and that's the thing, like if you are like really interested in kind of secret society films, I would definitely recommend checking this one out because it has a lot of elements that I think are pulled from real life, which is why like when we were like talking about this sort of thing, we were like, well, how does it tie into real life secret societies?
Well, I mean, it is very clear what group that they are referencing in this movie. Like the Tarsus Club is definitely a stand-in for Bohemian Grove.
Right, which is a real life quote-unquote gentleman's club that hosts a yearly retreat, which is the Tarsus also hold a yearly retreat. So let's talk a little bit about about Bohemian Grove and also about secret societies.
So Bohemian Grove is definitely a good example of a modern one, but mm-hmm. like what are some of our older secret societies?
Well, because secret societies have been going on for millennia. Like we know secret societies existed. You've got even from like the ancient Egyptian, Greece and Rome, you've got the Cult of Dionysus, you've got the Keepers of the Orphic Mysteries, you've got the Pythagorean Brotherhood. We know they existed, but how much of what is left about them is like real versus like propaganda? Again, how much is real and how much is a conspiracy theory about them? So these early groups, a lot of them were kind of like forced to adopt secrecy in a lot of ways, because a lot, especially religious ones, because they were kind of to like escape or to survive suppression and persecution from the state. Because like, I mean, again, a lot of the early Christian groups, these secret groups were in like pagan Rome and things like that. So like, I mean, there's so many like early Christian secret groups. Like, again, like Dan Brown has made a career talking about like Christian secret societies.
And isn't that where the Jesus fish comes from as well?
I think so. Yeah.
Like you drew like one half of it. And then if the other person was in the group, they drew the other half and that makes the fish.
Is that true?
I remember seeing that somewhere.
I don't know if that's true or not. That I have no idea. Anything.
But like religious groups, especially Christians mm-hmm. having, you know, those being the kind of the seeds of secret societies, it's a really fun thing to, I don't know if fun is the right word, an interesting thing to talk about because it ties in really well to like one of the kind of really well-known earliest conspiracy theories, and that would be the Great Fire of Rome in 64 AD. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what is it that you generally hear about the Great Fire of Rome?
So when you hear about the Great Fire of Rome, I think you always hear that as Rome burned, Nero played the fiddle and watched it burn to the ground because he was a madman and he either set the fire himself or had it set, or there was some element of he was responsible for it and wanted it to happen.
Right. The conspiracy was that he and his associates, they wanted Rome to burn mm-hmm. so that they could rebuild it in their own image. And that's actually not true. The cause of the fire was that, aided by wind and the wooden constructions of the houses, that's what caused it to spring up. And that fire lasted for almost a week. Nero was not even in town when it happened. And as soon as he heard about it, he returned to Rome and organized help immediately for the victims. Now, this is where the Christian part comes in.
Okay.
So to try to save face, he turned the conspiracy theory around to blame Christians for starting the fire and pointing, and that they were the ones who created the other conspiracy theory to point the finger at him. Of course, he's Nero. So everyone thought the Christians did it, and that led to many crucifixions and people being burned alive.
Which is also interesting because, like, you have this idea that this is the conspiracy theory. No, wait, this is the actual conspiracy that happened. And which one survived
right
after this era? Because Christians won. Which is probably why you have the madman Nero played the fiddle while Rome burned, instead of those terrible Christians burned it down, because we're no longer pagan. You know, like, America is a society that is built upon, like, Christianity.
Yeah.
Whether or not we want to acknowledge that fact or not, this is a thing. So in the end, the Christians won. So, which makes sense. Like, and that also is interesting how that kind of changes the way we look at history.
You could even build off of that, and, you know, anti-Semitism is just rife with, yeah, like, conspiracy theory. You know, like, if we're talking about, like, from a religious standpoint, like, the Jewish people, like, mm-hmm, always, like, world domination. Like, that's, yeah, something that we think is a thing of the past, but, like, anti-Semitic theories dealing with world domination are still super prominent in, like, Malaysia, Turkey, and Poland.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, you brought up the whole, like, the communism bit earlier. Like, Hitler blamed the German defeat on the Jewish population somehow being responsible for communism in Russia.
Sure.
Calling it Judeo-Bolshevism.
Okay.
But then on the other side of that, Stalin suggested that the Jewish people were responsible for the rise of Nazism. Like, mm-hmm, there was just no way to win.
No way to win, that. Because according to, like, so many of these early things, like, the Jewish people are in some sort of secret society to take over the world. Like, yeah, that's just really where it comes in from. And you see, like, talks of, like, all these, like, conspiracy theories regarding those. And that kind of, like, takes it away from, like, some of the real, like, the heat off of the real secret societies we still talk about today. Because there are a lot of, like, modern ones, too. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, you have Freemasons, which, and everyone talks about Freemasons.
There's nothing new we can say about.
Yeah. There's the Skull and Bones from Yale University, which is a secret. It's a frat, right?
Like, yeah, and there's a movie dealing with that.
There is a movie.
Starring Joshua Jackson.
Yes, and they did Crew in that movie, which is, you know. And then, of course, there's, like, the Black Hand, which is a Serbian military group, which is a real group, real secret society, which may or may not have been responsible for the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, and thus unwittingly starting World War I.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Again, the group is real. The conspiracy theory is whether
speculation.
So it's interesting there. Which kind of brings us to Bohemian Grove in a roundabout way. We got there.
So the actual group itself is called the Bohemian Club. Mm-hmm. Bohemian Grove is a restricted 2,700 acre compound in Monte Rio, California, where the Bohemian Club likes to, what would you call these events?
So it's like, okay, every year, a group of America's most elite and powerful men, they meet in this hidden summer camp. Okay. They drink, they toast marshmallows, and then eventually they dress in weird ass robes and burn wooden effigies to a giant owl statue in pseudo play pagan bullshit.
It's theater camp.
It's theater camp. It is theater camp for rich white dudes. So, and these, like, pagan, like, I say quote unquote, like, pagan rituals have these elaborate theatrical productions where, since they're all men, all the female roles are played by men in drag, and they sing and they dance and they have a good old time. So Bohemian Grove has for a long time been a source of mystery and shrouded in secrecy. And for a while, they didn't even admit that it was real. Like, Bohemian Grove is real, but is this society real? And when they did sort of admit that, yeah, it is a real thing, that's when you started getting the story of, like, well, they're harmless. Which comes to the two camps about Bohemian Grove. One believes they are just some guys that dress up and have theater camp. The other one believes that they burn children to death as sacrifices to the New World Order, basically. And
I have a feeling I know who one of those people are.
You 100% do. Because let's break it down. We know Bohemian Grove exists, and we've known for a while, because back in 2000, two very different journalists. I would call one of them a journalist.
The word journalist is doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
Two journalists managed to find their way into Bohemian Grove during this festivities and reported on their findings. So one of them, I think you know, is John Ronson.
Yes, documentary filmmaker.
Documentary filmmaker, mm-hmm. journalist. He's written a lot of books. He has written one like The Men at Stare at Goats. He has done a book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, which are both quite good. And he also has a book that is called Them, Adventures with Extremists, where he outlines his adventure visiting Bohemian Grove with well-known conspiracy theorist Alex Jones.
Oh, yes. Of InfoWars fame.
Of InfoWars fame, yes. So this is back in 2000, where before Alex Jones was as well-known
as... a huge public profile that he has now.
Yeah, before he was a Sandy Hook denier and before he harassed a bunch of grieving parents and that I will never forget or forgive. But that's neither here nor there. Ronson...
Literal tinfoil hat wearing.
Yes, he has put a tinfoil hat on, making the frogs gay, of making the frogs gay fame, where he has shouted on his show. So the two of them went to Bohemian Grove. Now, they have very different interpretations of the events that they saw there. And I think you have the Ronson quote that like...
Yeah, Ronson pretty much described it as being an overgrown frat party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it was basically like a bunch of like spooky ritual pseudo-pagans that were like reliving their college years, just throwing it up.
I mean, your standard Greek society type stuff.
Yeah. Jones went on air after the event and declaring it was... Probably a ritual human sacrifice of a child, probably a child. And this was an incredibly, as he put it, sinister experience. And he was kind of witnessing evil in the making while doing this. So let's explain how they both got there.
I was going to say, like, these are their experiences. Yeah. Like, how did these two gentlemen each, how did their experience getting there differ?
The story is so good. And this is as it has been told by Ronson. I want to point out, Alex Jones has not really spoken that publicly about his experience with Ronson, but I know the two know each other. So they meet up on the road where they're like kind of have parked away from it and they're walking in. So they're walking on the road and Alex Jones shows up and he's got a cameraman with him and he's ready to go and they're going to do this. And Ronson shows up being John Ronson, a very unassuming fellow. And like, I don't know how you, like, nebbish would you describe like Ronson?
That's probably a good word. Yeah.
He's great. Like, he has this TED talk where he talks about being publicly shamed, which is fantastic. So the two of them start walking towards Bohemian Grove and they get close to the gate. And Jones is like, they're going to probably be following us with suit. Like, we've got surveillance. We have to go.
He goes into stealth mode.
He goes into like quote unquote stealth mode. And apparently he and his cameraman take off into the woods to like whatever side of the road it is, leaving Ronson alone. And Ronson's like, oh, okay. And carries on his way. Ronson goes up to the gate and acts like he's supposed to be there. And they let him in.
Because if you are a unassuming white man with an undeserved sense of belonging mm-hmm. and confidence, you can pretty much get in anywhere.
Yeah. They just let him into this event. And like he's supposed to be there. So he goes and experiences the thing by like wandering by all these people in their ridiculous long robes and their 40-foot concrete owl statue. And they're about to start their biggest ritual they've ever had. And he's like, yep, this is a frat party. Okay. Well, Jones is trekking through the woods with his cameraman and comes out of this experience with the most shaky cam footage of burning the effigy that I have ever seen.
The cremation of care ceremony.
Yes.
Yeah.
And supposedly this ceremony is supposed to represent the burning of all your cares away. So you are like, it's the pagan, their idea of pagan rituals for you giving up your cares and worries so that you can like escape everyday life.
I was almost going to say like, oh, it's like rich white dude Burning Man, but I feel like at this point even Burning Man in and of itself is kind of a
that is what Burning Man has become. so they both experience this very same thing, and one of them walks out of it talking about children's sacrifices and the other one walks out of it talking about a frat party. What is that like? this is how conspiracy theories get going.
You know who I think we need to turn to for the definitive answer?
Who?
The trustworthy source that he is, Richard Nixon.
That's right. Richard Nixon is among many of the well-known figures that have ties to the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, I mean, quite a few presidents, Richard Nixon, Herbert Hoover, Ronald mm-hmm. Reagan, all known members.
Right. And what did the illustrious Richard Nixon say? Because I can't say it.
Yeah, I have to read this quote because it has the F slur in it. Yeah. So, and I'll do this in my best Richard Nixon for you. I'm going to get the jowls going and everything. The Bohemian Grove, which I attend from time to time, is the most faggy goddamn thing you could ever imagine with that San Francisco crowd.
Yep, that's right. Richard Nixon likened Bohemian Grove to San Francisco. So, like, okay, sure, Richard Nixon. That's on brand for him, though, I really have to say.
Yeah, but on the other side of that, you do have noted meetings there of people that did lead to, like, kind of really powerful decisions being made. Like, in September 1942, mm-hmm. there was a meeting there about the Manhattan Project, like, Oppenheimer was even there.
Yeah.
And then after that, you get the atomic bomb.
Yeah. And presidential candidates have been known to pick their running mates at like certain events like this too. So it is an event where a lot of very powerful people come together and make decisions, which sounds like a shadowy organization that's making plans behind the scenes.
But it's really funny to note that specifically they're like, this isn't a networking event. This is just guys having fun. I mean, their fucking motto is weaving spiders come not here. Like, you don't come here to make backroom shady deals, but it's like, no, that's exactly what's happening.
100% do. And I think that's kind of the takeaway is that even though it's perhaps not as like murderous and, you know, sacrifices coming out of it, there's still these like organizations that exist, that the kernels of truth are kind of there. And like, I don't want to sound like I'm going down on a rabbit hole here, even though it maybe sounds like I am, but conspiracy theories are built a lot of times on like kernels of truth that get twisted and changed.
Yeah. I mean, even though they may not be killing people, there's no telling what type of nefarious stuff is happening there.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And is it more sinister than actual human sacrifice?
Also worth noting, all dudes.
Yes.
No ladies. Sure.
No women are allowed. There's
been a few women inductees into the club, like mm-hmm. honorary inductees, but no actual women allowed at Bohemian Grove. They've done everything. They can't even stop there being like female employees there.
Yeah.
To the point of like taking it to multiple courts and their argument being that there's a bunch of dudes pissing anywhere they want. Do you think women want to be there? And like, granted.
No, I mean, as you look at me, like as a woman, I don't want to be there, but also like, does anybody working it actually want to be there to clean up after them? I don't think that's a really gendered thing. But yeah, that's Bohemian Grove, which is the focus of a lot of conspiracies and a lot of like foundation for a lot of secret societies. I think we see in media too.
Again, we both love conspiracy theories.
Yes, we do.
Do you want to talk about a few of our favorites?
Yeah, let's talk about them. I can start with one of them that I mentioned earlier. And this is a conspiracy theory that you probably heard of. And it's one that's been featured in several films and on media and television and stuff like that. And it is, of course, regarding the space program. And that the kind of very well-known theory that the U.S. government faked the moon landing. We've all heard that one.
Yeah.
Okay. But have you heard that it was Stanley Kubrick that did it?
I have heard that as well. Yes.
I love this conspiracy theory so much because it's like, who are we going to get to film the moon landing? Like, you can't just have anybody do it. It has to be like somebody really good to do it. We're going to get Kubrick to do it. And first of all, let's talk about the fact that Kubrick is so like method that he'd probably make you go to space anyway and die. We all know what happened on The Shining. We all know what happened there. But so apparently, like, according to this theory, that Stanley Kubrick was approached by NASA based on his work in the 1986 film 2001: A Space Odyssey, which is a gorgeous film, beautiful. But they were like, oh, you film space so well. We want you to make the moon landing. And he was like, no, thank you.
I mean, that checks out.
Yeah. No, thank you. I don't want to do it. So then according to the story, like NASA threatened Kubrick's little brother by threatened to out him as a member of the Communist Party, which, remember when this was, like, this was in the late 60s, so, like, the Red Scare had already been, like, mostly...
It already peaked.
We already peaked the Red Scare. Like, being outed as a communist was not the, like, same thing that it was, like, terrified of. So the story goes that, like, okay, so after they threaten his brother, he's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. So he supposedly spent 18 months on a soundstage shooting footage for the Apollo 11 and the Apollo 12 moon missions. And then you're like, okay, that's a crazy theory, right? Like, that's pretty weird, and a weird conspiracy theory that they faked the moon landing and Stanley Kubrick did it. Oh, no. We're about to go even further. Because did you know that supposedly the entire film The Shining is all about him admitting that he faked the moon landing?
It's his confession.
It's his confession.
Yeah.
So he confesses to the moon landing in the way that he directed the 1980 classic, The Shining.
By using somebody else's work.
Yes.
Like a book by a completely different person. Yes. That's not even his. He's using that story in this movie to confess for the moon landing.
Well, I mean, like Danny Torres does wear a shirt with Apollo 11 on it at some point in the movie. That's it. That's
case closed.
Yeah, we're there. We're right there. So this theory comes out, and like there is an entire movie, like a documentary about this theory.
Oh, Room 237.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which you haven't seen, right?
No, I have not.
It is delightful and wonderful. And I definitely recommend if you are like, what? It is, the movie is all about different theories. And I would wager some of them conspiracy theories about the meaning behind The Shining. And the faking of the moon landing definitely features into that one, as well as some other ones that I don't want to spoil for you. I really just, you should watch that documentary. And again, like, Kubrick's dead, so he can't, like, discount this theory. But we do know that, like, his daughter has been like, that's disgusting. That's a lie. That's not the truth. The U.S. government, like, didn't, my dad didn't help the U.S. government do anything. He wouldn't do that. And also, the moon landing's real. Just wanted to tie that in there.
There are astronauts that will punch you for suggesting otherwise.
100% Buzz Aldrin would punch you in the face, which he did to a conspiracy theorist who cornered him outside of a hotel, I think, in 2002. I know it happened in 2002. Yeah, he punched a dude in the face for saying he didn't go to the moon.
I mean, that checks out. That's very Buzz Aldrin.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that is one of my favorite conspiracy theories, is that Stanley Kubrick faked the moon landing. What about you?
So... I think I misunderstood the assignment.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Like, you went with this very, like, well-known, polished one. Mm-hmm. And the one I wanted to talk about, and it's one of my favorites because of how just wackadoo it is. And I want to first preface this with, like, I'm not making light of anyone being murdered.
Oh, boy.
Just want to start
out. Okay, you have to start out with that disclaimer. I don't know where this is going to go.
My favorite conspiracy theory is that Katy Perry... is none other than murdered child beauty pageant star JonBenet Ramsey. Have you never heard this one before?
Not really, no. I think I've like read this, like the title, and was like, no, I can't do this right now. And you're going to make me do this right now, aren't you? This is what we're doing.
So this was, it's a fairly newer conspiracy theory. It started circulating around late 2015. Mm-hmm. And just to, you know, again, since our listenership is primarily age 23 to 27, they may not know this.
How many times are you going to drop that?
I just think it's really funny. Go back to 1996. 6-year-old JonBenet Ramsey is found dead in the basement of her family's home. She was a child beauty queen. Mm-hmm. And there's still a whole lot of stuff surrounding the murder. It was never officially solved.
Right.
People thought it was her parents. People thought it was her brother. You know, they said that there was a break-in. That's how it occurred. I mean, it's an incredibly tragic situation.
It's a tragic story that we may never know the truth about.
Yeah. But the truth is that it was all a hoax by the Illuminati and Freemasons to make money by making Perry a star.
First of all, I'm... surprised that it took us this long to mention the Illuminati.
Oh my God, you're right.
I can't believe we went this far. Secondly, what the actual fuck?
So here's some evidence And I'm sure you'll find this to be compelling.
I'm already really unhappy, but here we go.
Okay. So if you do age progression on JonBenet Ramsey.
Jesus Christ.
Boom. You have Katy Perry.
Do you?
Hold on. I'm gonna show you. I'm going to show you an image here. And I will, of course, cut out all this dead air.
Why is this happening to me?
Okay. So this is probably the image that is the best to look at. They look strikingly familiar.
I don't think that they do.
People have noted they have the same eyebrows. And apparently your eyebrows stay the same through your entire life. They don't change.
Okay. But let's also point out that Katy Perry's eyebrows are incredibly well kept. So who knows what her actual eyebrows look like?
Here's another one. You're telling me you can't believe that little girl grew up to be that woman.
I mean, why is this a thing? That website is called New World University. So I can't believe, I don't want to name drop that. Don't go there. Don't give them clicks. What?
Also, their parents look very similar to one another.
Right. But when was Katy Perry born versus JonBenet?
Okay. So you may be saying that Katy Perry was 12 years old when JonBenet Ramsey was killed when she was 6. So there was 6 years difference. But come on. You could believe JonBenet Ramsey was actually 12. That's the thing.
No, that's not the thing. Why? No, this is bad. And you should feel bad.
I have more.
Oh, no. Okay.
So there is, in a biography of Katy Perry, she says, in reference to writing songs at an early age, quote, "Not that I was one of those stage kids. There was no JonBenet Ramsey inside of me waiting to burst out," end quote. So much like in the conspiracy, this is an example of hiding in plain sight.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. So why did the Illuminati want to turn her into a star?
Oh, I've got more.
Okay. I didn't know there was more. There's an awful lot about this poor little dead girl that I'm uncomfortable with.
I wanted to come with compelling evidence.
Okay, bring all your evidence.
So Phoenix imagery and rebirth as a theme is very, very prevalent in Katy Perry's music. In the Dark Horse video, I don't know if you're familiar with that song.
Yes.
It's kind of a banger. In that video, she's dressed as a phoenix.
Okay.
And then it also features pyramids. So
the Illuminati.
Illuminati.
Right, like the dollar bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then her Super Bowl performance, she's also dressed as a phoenix for that. Do you know what Super Bowl that was that she performed at?
I have no idea.
Super Bowl 49.
Okay.
What do you get when you add 4 and 9 together?
13.
Which is the number most commonly associated with the Illuminati.
You just broke yourself. You broke yourself with this.
I was trying to keep it straight the entire thing. I think I did pretty well. They have lots of similar outfits. I don't have pictures of those, but
she was 6.
Katy Perry's a woman. An adult woman. They have lots of similar outfits. I think that's again hiding in plain sight. Also in that Super Bowl performance, the motif of the stage she was performing on was a checkered board, which is also very much associated with the Illuminati. Also the Ramsey's house, checkered board floors.
I'm so unhappy. Getting progressively more unhappy the longer you go on.
Now, the reason why.
Okay.
Now they have Katy Perry. They're making a lot of money off of her. But also, at the time that the murder happened, they made a lot of money off of just the media coverage and everything associated with that.
How did they make money off of the media coverage? Who made money off of the media coverage?
The Illuminati.
Right, but
they own the media.
So they manufactured the murder of a small child to make money, which I can believe that, but
you're starting to convince you, aren't I?
No. I mean, I just believe that people with a lot of power have not a lot of morals a lot of time. So no, this is bad and you should feel bad.
I'm sorry. I feel like I have to apologize to everyone.
The amount of time it must have taken to build this is just wild to me.
Funnily enough though, I had heard this kind of whenever it first started circulating, but I hadn't thought about it in a long time. And so I was trying to go back and look for videos that I had watched back then. Almost all of them have been scrubbed from the internet. I was only able to find one of them still remaining.
Is that further evidence or just the
fact that... Oh, no, it's just an interesting fact. Okay. I'm done trying to present this as if it's real.
Wow.
You want to follow that?
Well, I did have another conspiracy theory for you that, like, is one of my other, like, favorite ones that I love to know about. But it does not involve the Illuminati. It does not involve pop stars and... Well, it does kind of involve murdered children, but in a completely different context. It actually involves a lot of time travel, though.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And this is technically, like, one conspiracy theory, but I have to explain another conspiracy theory before I can talk about this one. Are you familiar with the Philadelphia Experiment?
Vaguely.
Okay. So, there was a movie made in the 80s. We're not talking about the movie made in the 80s. We're talking about the Philadelphia Experiment, which supposedly occurred in 1943. Now, the story goes that the U.S. military was trying to find a way to bypass Nazi radar during World War II by using electromagnetic fields. And what they were doing is trying to use electromagnetics to, like, basically make an invisibility.
Okay.
A thing. So they were trying to build invisibility.
Science.
So the story has a lot of versions, and none of the versions are, like, match up, and everything's very weird. But they were center around the USS Eldridge, which is a real ship, a real naval vessel.
What a name to give.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. So the USS Eldridge is a real ship, and it was stationed at a naval shipyard in Philadelphia. So they were working so much with this to try to make it invisible on radar, but what they ended up doing was actually making the ship invisible to the naked eye, supposedly. So what's more, instead of just making it invisible, what they actually did is the ship was transported through a hole in time space to Norfolk, Virginia, more than 200 miles away. So they So not only did they make the ship invisible to radar, invisible to the naked eye, but also transported it through a hole in time, not a hole in time, but like through space time to Norfolk, Virginia. So the ship was gone for a matter of, like, seconds, I think. Very short period. Again, stories vary on how long it was gone. But it reappeared back into the shipyard in Philadelphia at that time, only several minutes later. However, that is when they discovered that some of the crew members had actually been fused to the bulkheads of the ship.
Whoa.
Or materialized inside out. Now, those that weren't done that were driven insane. So that's why we never hear about it, because people were either dead, inside out, or crazy. So they were driven insane by, like, the distortion of time, like, not, or space travel and all those other sorts of things.
This makes me think of Event Horizon.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. But, like, so they put it in, like, a hyperspace bubble that existed outside of space time.
Like you do.
Like you do. Now, obviously, when you dig into this story, there's a lot of things very wrong with it. The first one is that, like, all the key details of the story are just completely unprovable or inconsistent. So you can't time travel. Laws of physics apply, but, like, no two retellings of the story are, like, the same. Some mention the crew just went insane. The other mentioned that they were literally fused to the bulkhead, but still alive. Like, they were part of a living ship, and also crazy. And then, like, there's the fact that, like, the people who served on the Eldridge were like, what are you talking about? And in 1943, they were like, do what now? Like, what is this? Okay. So this conspiracy theory is bouncing around for, like, several decades, including to the fact that there was a not very good 1984 film that was made about it, where it kind of turned into almost like a romance story without the body horror elements whatsoever. It's really a weird movie. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Okay.
Right. So all this goes to say that I have to explain what the Philadelphia Experiment is in order to explain to you my actual weirdly favorite conspiracy theory, which is the Montauk Project. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard the Montauk Project.
Right.
That's it.
Not the Montauk Monster, which was the creature that washed up on the shore that all the photos were of, like, about 10 years ago. Do you remember that thing?
Yes.
That happened? Yeah. Which was really just, I think, a raccoon. They were like, it is a decayed raccoon. But the Montauk Project is going on for a lot longer. Now, this is interesting because, like, it is loosely has inspired the central premise of Stranger Things. Stranger Things, the show, bears a lot of resemblance to this conspiracy theory. in ways that like they actually like admit that. Okay, so the Montauk experiment, buckle up, because this is a wild ride, not only features that like the government kidnapped special children, but also it has psychic kids, government kidnapping, time travel, teleportation, mind control, and aliens, because there's always aliens. So here is the theory. This originated from a self-published book from 1992 by a man named Preston B. Nichols called The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time. This is a real book. You can read it for free online if you would like to.
I'll add that to my list.
Where he says that a number of experiments were conducted at Fort Hero, which is the Montauk Air Force Station in Long Island, which Fort Hero / Camp Hero, it is a real place, supposedly. Now, Nichols says that he, like, had recovered his memories in the 90s from his time spent there, and that he was part of a paranormal research team doing a lot of research during the 80s. So back it up to the 80s now. We're back in the 80s. This is where things go a little more sideways, right? Now, remember when I talked about the Philadelphia experiment?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the first person to corroborate the story is a man named Al Bielek, who said he was actually one of the sailors from the USS Eldridge, who was time-traveled to Camp Hero in the 80s from this experiment. He was time-traveled from Virginia, from Philadelphia to Virginia, and somehow to Camp Hero in the 80s to help Nichols. Now, how do you think he recovered these memories?
How?
Well, he was watching the 1984 film, The Philadelphia Experiment, and managed to recover his memories of this event during his time watching the film. Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, Bielek also says that, like, his real name, he and his brother were both transported, and they were both, like, service officers. And his real name is, like, I think it's, like, Douglas Cameron or something like that. And he, of course, has psychic powers. Now, the two of them together developed a device called the Montauk Chair. I wish I was making this up, but this is
keep going.
Yeah. Which is a mind-reading device, which was a central component of the entire project. So this device, a person would sit in it. And again, going back to using electromagnetism, which you may remember from the Philadelphia experiment.
Science.
They were using electromagnetism to enhance the psychic abilities of anyone who sat in the chair.
I mean, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. So it started with some very simple things, like doing what's called remote viewing.
Oh, I know what remote viewing
is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Explain remote viewing to people who might not know.
Remote viewing is being able to, it's similar to astral projection, mm-hmm. But you are able to still remain conscious in your body while also still viewing events at a different place.
Right. And yeah. It is a very like popular thing to talk about with like paranormal like researchers or...
Bilocation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a very popular like topic in this kind of like, I don't want to call it research, but you know, remote viewing.
I've had remote viewing done.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, do you want me to go on with that?
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed and like, don't know what to do about it right now. So anyway,
remember I'm the Mulder.
Yeah. God, Mulder, what are you doing? So it started with remote viewing and then they were able to like move objects from one place to another. And then they were could actually open portals through space. But then they could open portals through time. So this was part of all this was happening. And again, this is in the 90s when they're telling the story. They were kidnapping children, local children were being kidnapped and like taken in to conduct these wild mind control experiments on, which of course they managed to tie MK Ultra into. Of course, they were using MK Ultra to both enhance the psychic abilities and also to control these children.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other thing. And it's kind of like unclear like what terrible torturous things they were doing to children, but much later several grown men have come out and said that during the 80s they were the children that were using the experiments. But they only recovered the memories later. Again.
After watching them.
We are all talking about recovered memories, right? Why is the Montauk Project no longer with us? Like, why can we not just use our psychic powers and destroy our enemies and beat the Soviets at their own game?
I'm sure time travel has something to do with it.
Well, you're not far from wrong there. Because This was all shut down in the late 80s because Nichols and Bielik felt like the whole thing had gone too far. They were just murdering and torturing children too much, and their consciousness got the better of them.
We all have a breaking point.
Right. Well, but that isn't actually what their breaking point is. Is that apparently they were using the Montauk chair and they actually summoned a monster from another world. Yeah, they summoned it in and it wanted to come. It was a hairy, nasty according to Nichols' description. And it was going to come over from their world into our world and destroy it. It wanted to take over the world. So they had to destroy this monster together. The whole team got together as a super team and fought off this psychic monster before he could get free from the facility. And then they shut it all down and buried it in concrete and left.
This is Stranger Things.
It is Stranger Things. And like, I wish that I was like telling you the plot of Stranger Things. I'm not. This is an actual conspiracy theory that has gone on since the 90s that the Montauk project has like gone and built from. And they've taken like pieces and parts from different things because of course like interdimensional aliens have featured pretty heavily in it, and all of the research and being able to do remote viewing to alien worlds was a big part. So, and of course, like all of these things came from this one man named Preston B. Nichols and his book, The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time, which he billed as being real. And he's got a following. There are a lot of people that believe some pieces, parts of this in their battle for like interdimensional forces of good and evil.
Very compelling stuff.
Isn't it? So like the two of those together, like the Philadelphia, I love the Philadelphia experiment because you have this ties to like World War II. You have this ties to stopping Nazis, these ties to like wormholes in space. And then also the idea that people come back wrong and that the government hit it. So like both of these are very like government conspiracies, like cover ups that are really fun. So yeah, now you know where Stranger Things came from, which is wild. And I still love Stranger Things even knowing this, but it's like, yeah, no, this is the Montauk Project.
Yeah, it is.
Okay? Yeah. That's why there was that lawsuit about Stranger Things because of the development of it and a lot of that stuff.
I remember hearing about that. Okay, yeah. Now that makes sense now. I didn't know like the full depth of
it. Some of that was about like this sort of thing. I don't think Nichols was the one that even sued. I think someone made a movie based on Nichols' work. Like a short film or something.
And then said that Stranger Things ripped that off.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. When, of course, they were both building from, like, Nichols stuff. So it's interesting when you, like, look at all the parallels between Stranger Things and this conspiracy theory from the 90s. But yeah. So, yeah, those are my favorite conspiracy theories. I'm sorry they're not JonBenet. Do you have anything else for me that's not JonBenet?
I do. I have another one I'll bookend yours with.
All right.
And that is that Blue Ivy...
Blue Ivy?
Beyonce's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Is an Illuminati princess.
Okay, go on.
I really only have... I really only need one piece of evidence for this one.
Okay.
To convince you.
Okay.
And that's in Blue Ivy's name itself.
Okay.
It stands for Born Living Under Evil, Illuminati's Very Youngest. Hiding in Plain Sight.
Did this come from Reddit?
I don't know where I pulled this one from. I didn't make it up.
Man. I
mean, you came in here with like two that are kind of well known and like do have some elements to them that's like, I could maybe believe that. And then here I am with just this like, I misunderstood the assignment.
I feel like you definitely just completely understood the assignment, to be honest. You know what you're about, and it's, like, ridiculous, ridiculous stuff. Me, I was like, but let me tell you about the true story behind Stranger Things. And you're like, okay, but, like, what if we talked about, like, other things? Like, Blue Ivy and Illuminati. I'm actually surprised we didn't, like, talk about the Illuminati, but I feel like everybody talks about the Illuminati.
There's not a whole lot more we can say about them. No. Oh, one other one, I don't want to go into this one, that I'll bring up just because we talked about Alex Jones. There is also a conspiracy theory that Alex Jones is actually Andy Kaufman. And that the whole persona of Alex Jones is just yet another Andy Kaufman project.
I like, he's too young. But otherwise, I'm like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Because you won't want to believe that Alex Jones is actually real. Like, that plays into your, like, is this person a real person that really does these things? It has to be some kind of like
weird caricature. Yeah.
And I think that's what I think a lot of people want to believe with this, is that these things are like, the people that believe them are performance artists. They really want to, they really want to like just kind of entertain you, but it's not real. So I think that that's like sometimes both disappointing in humanity and also like, oh, these things can't, like why we don't take them as some things as seriously for a lot of conspiracy theories, because conspiracy theories can have real life consequences. We've seen them play out over and over again, specifically with things like the Satanic Panic, or today era, but these things are very real, but it doesn't stop people from believing in them.
No, I think they serve two purposes. Like we mentioned before, like, mm-hmm. you know, in the context of like the reason we're talking about them, we like them because they're hilarious and just how absurd they are. But the other part of that is that we make these conspiracy theories up to make sense of things and bring order to the world that is essentially chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, that is true. Like, humans would rather have a false explanation than no explanation at all.
Mm-hmm.
We need things to make sense. And if they don't, we're going to tell ourselves stories to make them make sense.
Yeah. And conspiracy theories even like paint our perception of historical events. Like a good example of that is like the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
You know, we have all heard like, oh, you know, that what we were told is not what really happened, that it was a coordinated thing to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that that type of conspiracy theory would peak around the event, or like even like a couple of years afterward. Gallup polling shows that 3 years after the assassination, 50% of the population believed in a conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
revolving around that. It's like, okay, that's its peak. It's going to go down from there.
Yeah.
It increased over the years to a high of 81% in 1975. As it stands today, 60% of the population still believes that the JFK assassination was a conspiracy.
That's so interesting, because it kind of like, that goes against logic that you would think, because, for example, the faked moon landing in 1979, in that era, like about 30% of people believed that the moon landing was faked. And today that number is what, like 5%? According to Gallup polls, mm-hmm. It's like only around 5%. So it's fascinating to see which conspiracy theories linger and grow versus which ones we cut out.
It's like the ones that involve, like, I mean, it's the whole reason we picked the conspiracy. Mm-hmm. It is a very like grounded real world thing.
Yeah.
I think those are the ones that have the staying power.
I think you're right. Yeah. I really do think you're right. Because when things like big things like that happen, this idea that there's power in knowing the quote unquote truth, because the explanation is either too simple or not enough for you. So these ones that are like either some sort of political power or some sort of like big geopolitical like landscape, you feel safer when you think you know the actual truth, even if it's not the truth that someone else is telling you. And it's a coping mechanism.
Knowledge is power, even if it's like even false if it's knowledge.
Wrong knowledge. Yeah. Like it's, and there's also like, I think thing to touch on too, is that conspiracy theories have a big community. And people like to be part of a community.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel this idea of like the sense of belonging. So these people build a bond with each other about being safe in their beliefs. Again, it comes back to safety. It comes back to like making sense of the world and like all this other stuff. It's like you have a bond with people who believe the same thing. You share this belief, and you share this belief in this system that's right and this is wrong. And it is us against them, which I think a lot of our societal fears are built on is us against them. And we come back to that a lot, I think, on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I think this is definitely a good example of that.
And I think also it comes from a place of, since conspiracy theories are so nebulous in nature, mm-hmm. and there's all of these elements like, you know, quote unquote evidence, there's something you can contribute. You can always bring something new to it, you know?
Yeah. There's certain things that like you can, like, I found out this mm-hmm. is what I found. And since it's ever growing and ever changing, what you bring into it shapes it. So you are a part of it and not just a bystander, I guess.
In an age, like, again, you know, there aren't more conspiracy theories now than there ever have been. It's just mm-hmm. that we're much more connected. It is so easy for us to contribute in these ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like we trade in information now. Information is currency.
Oh yeah. That is definitely true. And the more information we have, the more power we have.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have information other people don't have, secret knowledge. People always seek out secret knowledge. It's why we tell each other stories. It's why we build and grow on things.
So we love the occult.
It's why we love the occult. It's all secret knowledge. So yeah, that I think that's why conspiracy theories, we can't get rid of them. Like, they're always going to be around. And especially when you look at the research that like suggests that the biggest percentage of adults believe in at least one conspiracy theory. If anyone, you know, if anyone's listening, like, what conspiracy theories do you think have the best chance of being true?
Yeah, it would be, obviously this will not be the only episode we do on conspiracy theories.
Oh no, much more to talk about.
Like your general, general education conspiracy theories. Like there's going to be more specific ones.
Yeah, because I know we really want to talk about a lot of things moving forward, because we'd really like to talk about the satanic panic. I would really like to talk about a lot of cults and how they relate to both conspiracies and how conspiracy theories play a part in horror movies moving forward. Because I think talking about this is really important to understanding a lot of the underlying foundation for horror and why a lot of it is so enduring, like why we keep seeing the same stuff come up over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it does all hinge back on that. We have to make sense of shit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, why do human beings tell stories? Because they won't understand.
Yeah. Well, I think that if nothing else out of this, maybe we have given listeners some ammo to shoot back at their favorite uncle whenever he comes at them with some sort of ridiculously absurd political conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Just come back at with you do know that Katy Perry is John Benny Ramsey, right? I'm sure that is guaranteed to get anyone to stop in their tracks.
You could just redirect. Did you know? Yeah, I think that I hope that people kind of look into the conspiracy theories and see what research has been done on them, and even just debunking them, because I think that's just as important too, is like understanding why people believe what they believe, but why it's wrong. And I don't think we do enough talking about why, because no one wants to tell you that you're wrong. Sometimes you're just wrong, man. Like, I'm wrong all the time. It sucks, but that's where we're at.
I am very rarely wrong, so I do not know what that's like.
Go home, you're done.
Okay, we should probably get started on that Thanksgiving prep that we...
Yeah, we hope that you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll be back with you after this holiday, but before the next
one. But going into the next one.
Going into the next one.
So we'll go from gobble gobble to ho ho ho.
Ho.
Culture Cryptids is recorded, produced, and engineered by me, JD.
And me, Corey. You can find us on social media at Culture Cryptids on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Questions, comments, corrections, hate mail? Email us at culturecryptids@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.